Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, everybody. This is Marshall Kirkpatrick. We are excited to do the first episode of a show with the working title Bad Hair Day tonight. My co-host Dave Weiner is hopefully going to be on in just a minute. We're experiencing some thrilling technical bumps in the road, but I'm hoping that he will arrive shortly. I've been listening to Dave for years on podcasts. I've been waiting for an opportunity like this for a long time, so I'm more than happy to wait a little bit longer. That is just fine. I appreciate your coming and joining us tonight. To be honest, I'm not sure if I am broadcasting live or not, though I suspect that I am. So we've got a number of different topics we're going to discuss tonight. I'd be happy to take further suggestions by Twitter if you'd like. I'm at Marshall K on Twitter, and Dave is at Dave Weiner on Twitter. The biggest news is the release of the 3.0 operating system for the iPhone, something that both Dave and I have already had some chance to kick the tires on. But we're also going to talk about some other matters. Dave wants to talk about the new Opera Unite operating system, or a browser rather. And I'm interested in talking about some aggregate data analysis issues. That's a big topic that I'm always interested in, that I think there's a whole lot of potential for in future stages of the web. And there's been some interesting news just recently about it. There's two different angles that we're going to engage with that topic from. The first being some news that Mike Arrington broke late last night when he reported that apparently Facebook is planning on offering a public messaging capability. By default, all of the messages on Facebook have only been visible to friends that you already have, but TechCrunch reported last night that that is going to change, and that's a real big deal because it's going to enable, hopefully, search all across different people's messages as well, and perhaps in the future some real interesting technical analysis of who's saying what, who they're saying it to, et cetera. And the other angle that we want to talk about that from is a concern that Dave has been blogging about recently, and that is the long-term viability of people's Twitter messages. Over on scripting.com, Dave's blog, he wrote earlier this week about an interesting proposal to ask Twitter clients to participate in backing up of messages, because as many of you may have realized, if you've spent much time searching Twitter, the available archives don't go back very far. And there's all kinds of downsides to that. As a journalist, I know I'm often frustrated by the inability to recall messages that have been posted earlier, and just as a matter of personal security and archiving. It's a real bummer. So there's any number of different ways that problem could be solved, and we will get into it in depth from both a nitty-gritty angle here in the present with references perhaps to the past. I wouldn't be surprised if Dave's got some interesting insights based on the early days of RSS. Let's talk about Twitter archives, and I know I've got an eye.
Hey, Marshall, I'm here.
Oh, wonderful, Dave. I sure am.
Oh my God! I almost said a bad word there. Who have you been talking with, and how's it going?
I've been talking with our fabulous listeners, and it's been going great.
Really? Oh, that's good. Well, yep. I don't think it would be Bad Hair Day if the first little bit of the show wasn't completely catastrophic, and it was operator error on my part, and my Skype crashed, and I couldn't get back on. So here I am.
Ooh. Well, welcome back.
So thank you so much. I really feel like I have arrived. So how's everything going?
Oh, it's going great. I mean, we're here together, and the tech news world is continuing to unfold. Lots of exciting stuff going on, and life is groovy.
So maybe we should like kick the show off with the big news of the week, which seems to be iPhone 3.0. Have you installed iPhone 3.0 on your iPhone?
I sure have. I made sure to do it before the show.
Did you? And how's it going?
Oh, it's going real well so far. I know that there are some esoteric features that I haven't had a chance to poke and play with yet, but I'm real excited about the simple things. The cut and paste. I even liked a little shake to undo typing, stuff like that. And I'm real excited to see my first push notification come through. So we'll have to see when that happens. But so far, so good. I've waited. What's that?
Mm-hmm. You waited until the official release, yeah.
Well, I waited after the initial release because I heard there were so many problems with download yesterday.
Yeah, it's always a good idea. You know, I like to let other people be brave on my behalf, and that's what I did, too. I didn't upgrade until this morning before I went on a little trip to Sacramento. I had a glitch. When I wanted to get the camera and take a picture, the camera icon was not on the desktop. It had disappeared. And so I did a blog post asking for help from, you know, the scripting news readers. And got a bunch of suggestions. The one that finally worked, there were two that were, one was a hack and the other one was the actual solution. The first was to gesture to the right from the desktop and to search for the camera app, which I hadn't even tried the spotlight feature in the iPhone. And so that worked actually the first time, and I was able to take pictures. And then somebody suggested just rebuild the desktop, which is something I didn't even know the iPhone could do. And so that meant go to the Preferences app, and then I don't even remember what was the command. I'll get it for you. But there was a glitch, but might not be a very big one for some people, but for me it was a big deal. Marshall, how do you use the iPhone? What do you like do everything with your iPhone?
Yep, I do a whole lot with it. I do a lot of Twittering via Tweety, spend a lot of time on Friend Feed, use it real similar to the way that I would use a browser on my laptop, use a service called Smub to do bookmarking, catch a lot of news stories that I share out with my team members, things that we should look to report on. I love my phone. Works real well.
So it's to you. It's like do you carry any kind of a portable computer with you when you go places, or is the iPhone pretty much it for you?
That's it.
Is it?
Yep.
You know, so for me, it's different. I'm a big netbook user. I've had three different Asus EEE PCs. I've been tempted to try others, but seems to be the right product for me. I'm thinking about doing a Hackintosh. Haven't done one of those yet, you know. But for me, the iPhone, you know, at the beginning, the iPhone wasn't good enough because it didn't have apps. And so, you know, basically I could use it as a camera. I didn't like the email on it, and Gmail wasn't very good. Gmail is my primary email account. And then when the apps finally came, I didn't like that it was all, you know, closed up. So I didn't want to, you know, using it for, I mean, I know it's, I don't even fill the second screen of my iPhone. I have run so few apps. For me, it's a phone and a camera, and that's about it.
Oh, so you don't have a favorite app then?
Not really, no. I mean, I don't use any Twitter clients. I do use Twitter on it, but I just use the mobile Twitter app, you know, the mobile Twitter website, basically. So have you been tempted? Now, I know that the other, Twitter clients have become available for the iPhone now. Have you been tempted to try them out?
I have. I've started to use TweetDeck a little bit, and I'm real excited about the prospect of syncing my groups across from the desktop to the mobile. I haven't been able to do that yet. I registered for an account on the mobile, and it's just going to apparently take a few more minutes to figure out how to sync those two. But that I expect to make a really big difference, because Twitter, for me, is all about groups and segmentation.
Is that right? So, like, you have different – what are some of the groups that you have on Twitter? You
divide
things up.
I'll tell you, I don't talk about this publicly very often because it delivers so much value to me, but I will here on the show.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, if it's something you've
got to
talk
fun.
About,
it's okay.
Okay, sure.
You know, so in addition to the standard list of all my friends and probably a pretty typical column of people who are especially high value for me in terms of messages that they send, you know, in my world that means people likely to break news or find news first, I've also got a couple of columns, one dedicated to professional industry analysts on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and another to tech and business writers of the New York Times. And I've also got a column that's just a persistent search for the word unicorns, which is good fun.
Why unicorns?
But
you're just interested.
I've got a thing
Pardon
for
me?
Them, you know. I just love
See?
Unicorns, and
okay.
it, you know, it's just like you like bad hair days. I like unicorns. And
yeah, well, I have
go.
Bad hair, so it's become a, and you know, it's funny because I've hacked up something like that for myself, like. I wanted to be able to read all of the tweets from people who work at the Twitter Corporation, and so I wrote an app that it's kind of a hack, but it it led to some interesting things. Basically, I created a phony user called Clueless Newbie and had him follow. Or her, I don't know. I mean, I think newbies as being males. I had him follow all of the people I could find. And actually, there was that report that came out that listed all the 47 people that work at Twitter. And so that was actually pretty easy for me to do that. And then all I did was write an app that just polls that account and gets the updates for it. So then I could get a feel for what the people of Twitter – you know, what are they writing about? What do they care about? And that was pretty revealing because it showed – I wanted to sort of see what the correlation was between the suggested user list and, you know, the people that they follow, because they had said there was a correlation between the two and honestly didn't see the correlation. And then after that, since I already had the capability, I did the same thing for the people of the New York Times. And so I can instantly see – keep up to date on what they're using Twitter for. And that was pretty revealing, because especially during the whole Iran thing that happened in the last week or so, I thought they did a fantastic job of covering it, and I don't think they got enough credit for it. And I think that you had to have a view like this onto them in order to be able to see that. And then I also did one for the Gilmore Gang, which was pretty interesting. I wanted to see if there was any cohesion to that group of people and how they communicated amongst themselves. And it was very much like the podcast, actually. It still is, even though they don't seem to be doing the podcast anymore. But, you know, I wonder what's going to happen. I'm pretty sure that Twitter is going to add groups to the basic product, and I think that's going to happen pretty soon.
Yeah.
That's just from reading. Yeah, absolutely. I think they think in those terms, and I've seen Ev talk about that at various places and times. And, you know, I sort of developed a sense over, well, you know, I've been in this industry for a long time, and people come right out and tell you what they're going to do, but they leave hints around, and I think they're pretty much, I think they're ready to do it. I think they have the feature, and I think it's going to be coming out. You know, Ev has said basically that they've got a whole, you know, bunch of stuff that's ready to go, and I think that's one of them. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays with the developer community, given that they've already sort of added this feature onto Twitter. You have any thoughts about that?
Oh, I think that's real interesting. I wonder how much how likely that is. You know, after you did that app that showed all the Twitter staff tweets, I had incorporated that along with a bunch of other research that we did at ReadWriteWeb about the Twittering habits of people on staff, and they tend not to follow very many people. They follow an unusually small number of people, in fact. And it seems to me that that is when, you know, that's when groups become most useful, when you're following a large number of people. And I know Ev responded to an inquiry of mine for that story, and he said that if he followed more people, he was worried that he might miss some of the messages. So that makes me wonder about how enthusiastic he'd be about groups. But if they go with groups, I think that'd be great. You know,
I'm sorry for interrupting. But I think that that has a lot to do with the psyche of developers. I mean, I kind of doubt that the developers of, well, I don't know the developer of Tweety. I don't know actually any of the developers of the clients. Okay, so let me phrase this as a question then. It's like, I wonder how much any of those people actually needed the groups feature themselves. I think they hear from users, and you develop a sense of what the users want. I don't subscribe to this method of software design, by the way, but I've noticed a lot of people do it. In other words, they sort of ask their users what features are most desired, and I think groups shows up. And I think it showed up for the developers of TweetDeck. I think it showed up for the Seismic guys. I think it showed up for Tweety. And I think it shows up on Twitter's radar, too. I think that users say they want groups. And
yeah, I wonder. Even the 95% of less savvy users that are coming in?
Who knows? I mean, this is, you know, part of what we do here. I think I'd call it vendor sports. I didn't make that term up. It's been used for forever in the tech industry. And, you know, you speculate a little bit. We'll find out soon enough. It's not like the earth's going to shake on whether or not I got this one right or not. You know, it's just sort of, I mean, what do you think? What do you think Twitter's going to do next? What kind of features do you think, do you see coming?
I would love to be a fly on the wall for would be to take a peek at how much use people are making of the Facebook groups feature that came into being, what was that, just last month? Or maybe within the last couple of months.
Tell me about that. What's going on there?
Well, within the last couple of months, Facebook enabled you to segment out all your different contacts into different topical lists or groups. And you're prompted to add them to lists when you add people as friends. You know, just like they used to ask you, how do you know this person? I'm not sure that they're even doing that at all anymore, but now you're prompted to put them into a particular list. So you can go in, and instead of seeing the whole feed of all of your friends' activities, you can jump from feed to feed. And I wonder how much use that's getting. I thought it was real interesting.
I have no clue. I don't have a clue. I mean, I think these things are... I mean, I know like Scoble uses groups or rooms or whatever. I think they're rooms in friend feed, and he just swears by them. He says that if people were using them like he uses them, then he would have, you know, a lot of other people would be as in the loop as he is. I agree. I see that as a level of anal retentiveness that just most of us don't get that deep, you know. To get everything set up so particularly. I mean, I'm a River of News guy. I'm sure that's pretty obvious by now, right? I mean, and I never sort of like subscribe to this idea that, you know, you have tabs. Like people in RSS readers, they sort of gravitated to the idea of an RSS reader as an email app. And I thought that was totally the wrong way to approach this thing and that you get rich from doing it that way. Yet a lot of people said that was the way they used it, and that was the way they were going to keep using it. And I see that as being the root of some of the backlash that you hear about RSS now, because they were using it wrong, in my humble opinion. Right? I have to add that. Put a little smiley on there, too, right? Don't hit me, okay? I think they were using it wrong. And so when Twitter comes along, and Twitter is, if anything, a river of news, right? So they're happy with that because they should have been using River News to begin with. So, I mean, it seems to me that a lot of people are using, like you, when you described it, it sounded to me like you're using Twitter more or less as if it were an RSS sort of a hybrid of the point and click drill in and approach, plus it is also a river, right?
Yep, that's how I've always used both RSS and Twitter, for sure. I've got, you know, content is segmented out and prioritized. And then once I get through the super high priority stuff, then I say, okay, hit me with the as much of the whole river as I've got time to enjoy. But I certainly don't lose sleep over, you know, not drinking every drop in the river.
You got to do that, right?
Have you seen Pierre Omidyar's service, Jinx?
I tried it. You know, it was one of those things that I tried for like 10 minutes and didn't particularly think that it fit into my routine and never looked again. Should I be trying it?
Oh, not necessarily. But there's one part of it that's really interesting, and that is that incredible emphasis that they put on groups and curation of groups in particular. Mm. They've got topical experts who are going in and recommending, you know, a list of 20 people to follow who are experts on China, for example. And you can just with one click add all of those people at once. You can view them either in your full river
that's
or...
That's reading list, Marshall. That's reading list. That's exactly what we were talking about back then, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And unfortunately,
it is if their lists are good and if they've got enough people using them to attain critical mass.
I don't think they do. But the other part of that story, though, is that if there was an OPML-like format for Twitter groups or groups in any social network so that you could export and import across different applications, that could make a really big difference, too.
Hmm. In other words, they would produce a list inside of Jinx, right? And
mm-hmm.
you'd be able to use that list in Tweety if you wanted to, right? Is that
exactly.
What you're
exactly. Or
you know, they're
I
not
could
gonna do
take...
That. They're just not going to do that, you know? They're not going to do it. He's going to say, well, wait a minute. I'm doing this so that you use my product, not so that you use somebody else's.
I think we may see a format like that. I've been asking some of the vendors to build an
export. I didn't
say
you wouldn't see it. But what would you say to Pierre when he says that to you? What would you say to him to get him to do that?
Well, what I would say is, and this is something I've said to people who make other Twitter clients, I say that my groups in TweetDeck are so valuable to me that the switching cost is too high to go and use your app at all without them.
Right.
And so unless you can import, then I'm not coming in. Unless I can export out of your app, then I'm far less likely to invest some time and energy and work into building these valuable groups inside of your app. It's entirely possible that...
What kind of response are you getting from the vendors? What do they say?
Oh, the vendors are saying, I'm hearing people say, yeah, we're working on this.
That's what they say. The question is, when do they deliver? I mean, I did that, Marshall. I did that without anybody asking me. And as a result, what happened was everybody read my users could leave very, very, very easily, right? And that was important to me because I, as a user, wanted that. But my competitors didn't make it easy for them to leave their products. So, you know, this is what Tim O'Reilly says. Tim O'Reilly says you should... forget how he puts it, but you should put back more value than you take, you know, but too often that isn't what's going on. You know, what happens is the vendors are perfectly happy. They're glad to see somebody else do a great export. They themselves don't want to do it. They might pay lip service to it, but they don't actually come through. Like FriendFeed, for example, for however long they've been out there, they don't support OPML. And that to me, you know, and you have these users out there that evangelize FriendFeed all over the place and say, you know, why aren't you doing this in FriendFeed? Why aren't you doing that in FriendFeed? And it's almost like running into a Linux guy 5 years ago, you know. And I think, well, the reason I'm not doing it, first of all, is I'm a programmer, so I like to do my own stuff too. You know, so I'm not going to do everything in the friend feeds. The other thing is it's a roach motel. You put stuff in, and it doesn't, looks like what you're saying, it doesn't come out. There's no way out of friend feed. Yeah, and so, you know, we said this to these guys. They seem like they're really nice guys, you know, but they never do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the market leader in any of these little niches doesn't have much incentive to do so. But, you know,
the only market leader in size is Twitter. Twitter. There is no number two, there is no three.
Amongst the apps, there are. You know, there's a long list of Twitter apps, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if one of them. Yeah, and in fact, there was one just a little while ago. I don't think it was Tweety. I think it was another iPhone app that let you extract your groups from TweetDeck and use those groups in their client. And it was a really difficult workaround to make it happen. But I think that's a scenario we're more likely to see.
Right. Why don't we put this on the to-do list look at it in the future. Keep coming back to this one. Look for bright spots here and, you know, see what we come up with, okay? Because I want to ask you about tethering now. You know, turns out you apparently you have to do a little bit of hacking or whatever or something. You know, it's not exactly like unlocking your iPhone, but it's something that certainly isn't endorsed by Apple or AT&T.
It is endorsed by Apple with the release notes that you see when you download 3.0. They list tethering as one of the options.
So
with an asterisk
if
supported by the carrier.
Right. Okay. So should I just have said AT&T then? Because somehow I didn't get that feature. Okay. I have a new, you know, iPhone 3G, not 3GS, obviously. And it's very new. It's a great, you know, brand new shiny little iPhone, and it's got 3.0 on it, and there's no tethering, okay? So there's tethering in the docs that I've read, but there's no feature. Now, I read on, you know, blogs that if I want to get it, I can do it, but it's somebody isn't approving of this, right? You're saying it's just AT&T, but the hacking you have to do isn't, you know, doesn't look like it's just AT&T. It looks like it's Apple isn't wanting you to do this too.
The impression it's relatively simple to implement, even as is.
Have you done it?
I haven't yet. No, and I tell you, I would sure like to give it a try once I get an external battery pack for my phone.
Because you think it's going to use, a lot of battery, huh?
Yeah, you know, I need.
How big is that battery pack going to be?
there's some pretty good looking ones. I was over at Katarina Fake's site, Hunch, and that was one of the questions I asked. It was suggested to me, what iPhone battery pack should I get? And I didn't even know that was really that much of an option, but there's quite a market for them out there. And you just plug those little babies in, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm not sure if you still have access to the port, unfortunately. So maybe that'll be the killer. But yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, I've got an EVDO card right now. I spend $60 a month on it. I'd love to be free from that, but you know, I use it for 2 or 3 hours at a time.
Well, I bought the little MiFi things. I bought I had Sprint as my EVDO service provider, and then the Novatel thing came out. Everybody was, you know, showing off their Verizon things. This thing is the size of a credit card. It's a little bit thicker than a credit card, but it's not much. And so I just had to have that. It was $100. You know, and I kept my service plan, and I knew that at some point my iPhone would be able to do this, so I knew that this was going to be short term, but, you know, the iPhone is the right way for this to work, right?
Dave, I'm getting a lot of static right now. Are you hearing that?
No, it's the connection's getting glitched. I can hear you fine, though. Can you hear me?
I cannot hear you very well.
I don't know what happened.
enough.
Sounding more legible to you, you should say something.
Oh, I certainly will.
Yeah.
I'm going to try going outside myself. We've got cloud cover here in Portland.
You think it's you? It's not you, because I can hear you just great.
Oh, that's good. You know, I hear it's all better now.
Is it? Okay. Well, let's hope for the best. Now, I'm going to see you in a minute, because, you know, when I got online here, I mean, it was like a panic. I'm sorry if I was rude to you in the middle of all that, but I was just like, oh my God.
Oh no. Oh great. No worries.
Oh my God.
Hell. Have I still got you there, Dave? All right. Okay. So,
all right. Are you there?
What do you think of? I am here. What? Aren't you glad we're not tethering?
I just heard myself there, and now I'm back. Okay.
Okay.
Marshall, are you there?
I am.
Marshall? And can you hear
yep.
me?
Yep. I sure all can.
Right. We are
so
happy.
What do you think about tethering, Dave? What's your opinion?
Me? What do I think? I think tethering, yes. I think I pay $60 a month to Sprint. I'm willing to give some of that to AT&T, okay? And I would love to turn off Sprint, and I'd like to not carry the other device with me. I think that the iPhone should have been doing it from the beginning, but I understand that, you know, my guess is they didn't have the capacity. The AT&T didn't have the network capacity to handle, you know, all the iPhone users tethering their stuff. So, you know, if it isn't that, if it's more greed than that, then I'm really upset about it. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, I imagine it's probably both. I mean, they have a hard time. You know,
they're greedy. I want to ask you, let me ask you a broad general question, okay? Because, like, you look, I am sort of a dabbler, and I try things out. You know, when people send me a pointer, you know, I'll go look at the site, but I don't feel obligated because it's not my job, right, to look at every piece of software out there. But it kind of is your job to do that, right? And I want to make sure we save enough time to talk about Facebook because you have some things you want to say about that, right? But I just want to ask you a question. Is there anything, any app that you think that a guy like me must check out because it's so interesting and so representative of the future that everybody that wants to be literate should try it?
Well, let's see. I will I'll give you one obvious answer and one less obvious answer that I think is interesting and segues into the next topic of conversation. The obvious one, and maybe this is too obvious, but I just watched Lifehacker's Google Wave highlight tape today.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that?
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, it's great. They took an hour-long Wave demo video from Google, and they used a service called TubeChop, and I think it was Gina Trapani that did it. She went through and cut out 8 or 9 30-second highlights from the whole thing. You can find it over on her blog, smarterware.org, and
mm-hmm.
It's real exciting. I mean, it's a beautiful, graceful implementation of XMPP, and it's the real-time web. It's collaboration. It's the integration of multiple web services. It's just beautiful.
Really?
So
okay. So that fits that criteria that if you want to be tuned into what's coming in the future, that's something. I mean, obviously, we can't try the software, but we can look at that demo, right?
Yeah.
Or can we?
Yeah. No, I don't think we can try it yet. And it's almost cliche because there's so many people excited about it. But, you know, even if Google Wave, it seems so well-baked in the demo that it feels like it really is going to come out, and probably okay. sometime soon, and it probably will be relatively respectable. It might be fantastic. But I think that some of the things that it's doing are representative of things that a lot of people are going to be doing in the future.
Yeah.
The XMPP real-time.
My feelings about that are complicated to want to divert to right now. I would just say that I don't really want Wave to be the next thing, okay? What I want is I want Twitter to really, really get established and be perfected and simplified, and I want to clean up this whole suggested user list thing. And if that means reinventing Twitter from the ground up, I'm okay with that. That Twitter is just too promising and too useful, and because of its simplicity. My problem with Wave is the last thing that I want is another huge platform vendor type company to come in and try to do something monolithic that distracts us from the open web, the open internet. And I know it's built on open protocols and all the rest of that, but I really don't want Google to do that. That's so. But
yep.
The same way
I hear
Facebook. We lived with AOL. We got rid of that, and it was inevitable that it would happen, that we'd shed that, you know. And I think that Twitter is another example of that, even though it's remarkably open, more open than AOL ever was. It's going to have to get more open than that, than it is. And yet you have Facebook on the other hand, which is just so siloed, and they're trying to iterate themselves into not being siloed, and it's a painful, painful thing to watch, you know. I think doomed to failure. I don't think it can possibly work. What I really want Google to do is to be the great good parent here and just add value to what the Internet is already doing and not try to take us in a different direction, because I like so much the direction that we're going, you know. We just need somebody to come in here and say, well, this whole thing needs to be open, and to do is we're going to support what all of you guys want to do. And it's not just what the Twitter Corporation wants to do, because there was this great article in CNET today that said basically Twitter is no longer a young thing, and it's one of these paradoxes, because in every way it is, but in terms of how it's been adopted, it no longer is. It's now real world. It's not Silicon Valley. It needs to grow way out of the tech industry, and so that's what Google can do for us. Google can help that maturation process. Google trying to change the subject, no, I don't want them to do it.
I hear that.
I did what I said I didn't want to do. Let's talk about Facebook, or you talk about Facebook for a while, okay?
Sure. Well, before jumping in, I think a good segue is to talk about a second app that illustrates what Facebook could potentially look like. And hopefully Twitter will look a little bit more like right now. People who read Write Web regularly have probably seen me go on and on about this service called Melana. It's a fascinating little tool where you put in a Twitter username and it goes out and brings back a list of the 20 people that user has had the most reciprocal public at conversations with. Shows essentially who's in their inner circle of public conversation. And you can, when it's working well.
How do you spell the name?
MAILANA.com.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. So what have you learned from this?
Well, I've learned a lot of little things about different people. It's a great way to take a deep dive into the social graph, if you will, of topical experts on just about anything. I like to go over to Twello or Tweeps, some of the Twitter search engines that search the user description field, the bio field, and look for some keywords. Say I'm interested in microformats or animal, veterinary, medicine, whatever the case may be, and find some of the people who have the largest number of followers in those fields. then I take their usernames over to Milana and can see who they are having conversations with regularly. And I can just wow. jump right into the conversation that way and follow all those people. And it's just fantastic. Unfortunately, it only works so well because, as we discussed in the beginning of this podcast a little bit, maybe that was the part before you were here, but as you've discussed in your blog, the Twitter archives don't go back very far. So that really inhibits the it limits the number of messages that are available for analysis. There's still, compared to Facebook, there's a heck of a lot more information out there to analyze on Twitter. And so you can learn all kinds of interesting things. One of my favorite dorky little examples is using the service called Tweeps, T-W-E-E-P-Z. They'll search biofields for you and then show you all kinds of interesting information. For example, I know via that Twitter users associated with the semantic web tend to have fewer friends and fewer followers than Twitter users associated with microformats. Which just makes me chuckle a little bit.
What does that tell you? Isn't it? What does that say about their social? Well, let's not go there. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me finish Listen, you've got four more minutes left, Marshall. Four, and that cutoff point is firm. It's going to stop right there at 45 minutes. So let's talk about it. If you want to, let's talk about Facebook.
Sure. I mean, so that kind of parsing of information is not something you can do across the network at Facebook because of the fundamental privacy restrictions that have been in there since day one. You know, you can't search profiles and you can't search messages. And that is why this report that Mike Arrington put out late last night is so interesting. He says that there's going to be a new default privacy setting for Facebook status updates, and that's going to be that those status updates are going to be public and presumably
the default
searchable.
Will be that.
Uh-huh.
Is that right? So, and what will that do for people? Like, I'm already a Facebook user, so I presumably that default won't affect my account, right?
I'm not so sure. I think it may affect your account. I think you may need to opt out of that.
I see. I wouldn't have a problem with that. Because I never post anything to Facebook anyway, so it obviously wouldn't be a problem. But even if I was, it wouldn't be a problem.
So it's going to cause a huge uproar.
Mike had said that the other shoe was going to drop and that was going to be really bad news for Twitter, right? Was this it? Do you think this is what he was talking about?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, the way you framed it to say that Facebook is iterating towards openness and that isn't going to work seems like the counterpoint to...
I don't think so. I said to his first report, which I did point to. I know Mike sent you a tweet saying, "Watch out, Dave." I'm not, whatever. I don't want to go there. But I just thought he was wrong, and you know that to think that the Earth's going to shake because Facebook does X, Y, and Z to Twitter, I don't believe it. Because what Facebook really needs to do is to say, we got Facebook, it's got X number, 100 million users, that's great. We're going to keep doing that. Now we need to start something new. Because that something new is going to start with a whole different set of assumptions, and it's going to work off the same basic idea that Twitter operates off of. And that would work, and that would be totally appreciated, I think. Just give us a choice, do something that stands beside Twitter, or even stands behind it, okay? Think about it this way. You've got this incredible base of apps out there that are developed for it. Just get behind those and let them be the – and just do the same thing I was saying about Google is act like the mature adult and help us do what we, the users, want to do. And that can't help but work. You know, the tech industry is always thinking about how can I get the other guy. That isn't – when are we going to outgrow that is what I want to know. Because that's what – in order to really keep growing, that's going to happen, you know. So, they have extended our – I just got a notice saying they want us to keep going. Are you there?
Well, if they insist. If they insist, I'm sure we'll be happy to to do that.
Well, I think this is turning into a great show, Marshall. I think that this is, I think we're really onto something here.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm real excited about it, and I think we're interested in a lot of the same things, and I think a lot of other people are interested in this stuff as well. And, you know, there's no shame in coming back to consistent advocacy for an open web.
Yeah, well, that's ultimately what I'm going to keep coming back to. That's the only reason I got back into technology in, like, I hate to say, 1994. You know, I had more or less decided this stuff doesn't work because the tech industry is just going to had screwed it up so bad. And then I saw this blue sky. I said, wow, this is really incredible. And you know, the tech industry always keeps coming back and trying to lock it up again, you know. And it never works. And you just wonder, when are they going to finally stop trying to do that, you know. And I don't know.
So every time people reiterate there and start again with an open disposition, how do they – are is there a common strategy to deal with the cold start problem? Because that seems to be the biggest barrier to
– No, everybody loves starting over. That's not a barrier. That they love doing that. Look what happened with okay, let's take the transition from the personal computing software world, which is what existed before the web, to the web, right? Well, there had been all these problems that had been solved in the personal computer software world, you know, and the web didn't deal with any of that, right? I mean, just undo, okay? I mean, do you know how much work it is to put undo into an app? You know, the web doesn't have, not only doesn't have undo, it didn't have a writing tool. It was, you know, you work for Read Write Web, right? I started a thing called the two-way web, right? Tim Berners-Lee envisioned the whole thing being two-way. But realistically, when it first shipped, it was not a two-way environment. So all of the productivity apps that had been developed in the personal computing age, out the window, totally, goodbye, you know? And Microsoft, when they came in and took over the browser, kept pushing that because they didn't want it to protect Office. And so the last thing they wanted the web to do was to interfere with the creativity, the creation process. So we kind of had to wait until, we had to do it. The bloggers had to do it. That's how that happened. Because they were just trying to hold that back, but it worked anyway. Okay. So you say, how do you deal with the cold start? Is what happens is people get so, it's so impossible, you get so mired in the muck of the tech industry, anything looks better. So you just throw it all out. We're in the process of doing that right now, Marshall. I mean, you know, we're cramming the whole internet into 140 characters. You know, it doesn't fucking fit. Oops, it doesn't fit. It doesn't work. But we're doing it anyway. So we'll throw out whatever we don't need. Whatever we can do without, we'll just throw it away because we want so badly for it to be easy and simple again, right? And so, and that's always the right impulse. The question is, can you make that transition without throwing away too much? I mean, I hate to see us away the know-how because it takes a generation to reinvent it, you know? But that's the, they always want to reinvent. I mean, that's the easiest part. To convince developers that you could start all over from scratch, they'll always do it. Anytime. So.
Well, that makes sense from a developer perspective, and that's great. But from a user's perspective, it's the value proposition now is so based on the network effect of social connections that you know, I don't know how egregiously offensive Twitter or Facebook would have to get before people say, I'm gonna leave the primary value here of my social network, and I'm going to try to go out and start over again on a service where my friends aren't present yet.
I would, and I bet a lot of other people would too. I'll tell you, okay? I remember using Twitter, you know, 2 years ago and loving it, okay? And if you go back, I don't know how many people I followed then and how many followers I had at that point. But it was like probably 100 people. I probably followed 100 people, and my guess is I was followed by 1,000. You know, that was roughly the ratio. I always kept it about 10 to 1, right? And I think that was about what it was. I followed 100, was followed by 1,000, and I thought it was great. It was wonderful. And I think that the usage pattern I have today for Twitter, I think if I could do the A-B comparison between the two, of course I can't, right? But if I could, I think the other one would be better. I think it would be more fun. It would be more interesting. I think I was – it's like what Ev was saying. I think he was right, okay, that that when you're – when you try to follow too many people, it stops being very good, you know? And so, yeah, if it
was – I don't think so at all.
I know. Well, we're different. I think that much more of what I want and what I had to give up was the 23,000 people that follow me, I would do it. Because I'll tell you why. I wouldn't have done it before the suggested user list. Okay? I would have, because I was in the game then, okay? But they took away my incentive. They threw my incentive out the window because I don't feel I have anything to protect anymore. Because my 23,000 people that follow me puts me in the, you know, bottom, I'm not a leader there, okay? Let's put it that way. I'm not a leader in Twitter anymore. Nobody thinks of me that way, and that's fine. So I'll go be a leader somewhere else. I like being a leader, Mark. I really do. It's one of the biggest thrills of my life is to be able to be listened to. You know, I like doing it. But they've taken that away from me. They don't want me to be a leader, so fine. I'll go somewhere else, you know?
So how much time do you spend on Identica?
Zero.
Me too.
But you didn't ask why. I mean,
sure, yeah.
Identica's not an exciting place. I mean, the thing that's going to draw me out of Twitter has to be exciting. It has to be fun. It has to give me something that Twitter doesn't give me, okay? And they take things away from me that Twitter already gave me. Yeah, it's like, give me a break. Think about this, okay? Think about it this way, okay? You know, in the blogging world, designers were a big part of what we were doing. I mean, like interface designers and you know, web design type people, right? Well, Twitter hasn't given them a single thing to do here. Well, what about a Twitter that said, wait a minute, creative playground for people who have visual design ideas? That might be really pretty incredible place to play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just that one thing. Just take that one rule and relax it, and all of a sudden it starts getting interesting in new ways. And there are plenty of other things like that that you could relax that would be just a gas, you know? We should talk about this more some other time because I think we've really thrown a lot out there. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think you're probably right. The one thing that I would want to say to contrast with what you're saying is that that for me, Twitter is really, I mean, I don't mean to be self-righteous in saying it's about listening, but for me, the primary value is not in being able to broadcast and be listened to, but I find a lot of news from it, and both personally and professionally. And so for me, you know, I like that. That's a neat idea, opening it up and relaxing the visual design things, welcoming in designers. But for me, the access to historical content, the messages and bulk analysis of messages is what would get me most excited.
Okay, let me give you another one then. Okay, how about a Twitter where it started from day one with the guarantee that every single piece of text ever written in that system would be archived? Double backed up.
Yep.
Oh, completely, instantaneously searchable, methodically, systematically searchable, with no glitches. You know, I mean, obviously, can't ever say no glitches, right? But with no curveballs thrown in there, like the Twitter guys have done. I mean, let's get real, okay? They could let anybody in on the fire hose they wanted to, but they don't want to. So what about one that started with it that said, I'm going to make every bit – oh, you heard me. You heard what I said, right? I mean,
sure,
did you get goosebumps? Isn't that what you want? Isn't that what Marshall Kirkpatrick – isn't that your dream system?
Well, that's half of my dream system, and the other half of my dream system is, a real healthy number of people using the service from a wide variety of places in the world.
But there's a way to get that. There's a way to have your cake and eat it too, okay? And this is what I was posting about on scripting.com a couple of weeks ago, is that if you could convince 3 or 4 people to, in addition to posting all their users' tweets to Twitter, but also send that data to a place that was going to curate and store and save and protect and, you know, give APIs, new kinds of APIs to that data, you could have everything flow through Twitter just like it is right now, and you could also have all that. In other words, there are 3 or 4 bottlenecks out there, and templates are not hard to do, and the formats are not at all mysterious, you know, they're all very predictable. You just need to get agreement for 3 or 4 people, and, you know.
From the developers?
The
client
yeah.
developers?
Oh,
that's
correct.
I don't know that that's the case, Dave. I know that people say that a majority of traffic comes to Twitter via the clients, but I think I think a whole lot of messaging goes on through the web interface.
Totally. And that's all I use. I don't use any clients. You wouldn't get me, okay? I do not use any of them. I don't use Tweety, Twitter Deck, Seismic, any of it. I just use the web interface, okay? But you would get a lot of it.
Yep.
It would be a lot more than you have now. Let's put it that way. And it would give, let's say it would be 40% of what goes on Twitter. I think realistically that's about what it is, okay? Is it 40% of what goes on Twitter goes through the clients? What do you think? Think it's 40?
No, I don't. I think it's, there's so many different factors. There's the fact that 10% of people do produce a really disproportionate number of the messages, and those people are more likely probably to be using a client. Yeah, I don't know. It's real hard to say. It might be 30%, might be 20%, might be 50%. I'm not sure. I mean, it would be nice if we could analyze the data in aggregate.
I just want to play out the scenario, though, okay?
Sure.
So that if, you know, so let's say it's the lowest number you threw out there, 20%, okay? Well, all right, 20%, you can already, and I'm willing to bet that the most prolific tweeters are the ones that use those clients. I don't know for a fact, but let's try to find that out over the next week, okay? Let's make an effort to try to understand that part of it, all right? Then with 20% of the content being archived, I think you got a case to Twitter to be doing the same thing with the rest of the people. In other words,
Possibly.
A little bit of leadership from outside. The problem with it is, I'll tell you the political problem. The political problem is those guys don't want to in any way be appearing to try to lead Twitter, because that would get Twitter angry with them. And when Twitter is angry with you, and this is the reason why you want to stick to the open web and you don't want these platform vendors to get too much power, is because having Twitter angry at you is bad for business. You can't tolerate that. That's got to be broken. That has to be broken. It will be broken. That's exactly the problem that the web broke in 1994. The industry had gotten too much about not wanting to piss a few people off. And what happened was the users took control. The users caught on to what was going on. In some way they did, because they found they could do what they wanted to do over here that they couldn't do over there because the restrictions. We just got told 90 seconds. Because the restrictions got too onerous in the sort of real world, so they invented a new world. And true, there was all this stuff you couldn't do over there, but, oh, God, it was so much fun, Marshall. That's the thing they can't do to you. They can't give you fun. With all of these vendors that are scared to step out of the power trips of the valley, they can't do fun. Fun isn't what they do. So eventually, you know, it's like there's this great Beatles song, you know, she's leaving home because she's having, I'll find that song, I'll play it, okay? We'll
Sounds
open
great.
The next show with it. Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much for listening and asking these questions. I think this is going to lead to something, so.
I think so, too. Good.
Awesome.
Well, thanks a bunch for kicking us off, Dave.
Hey, thank you, Marshall. But I think we still have a few seconds. I don't have a song. Hey, I do have a song. Okay, I'm not going to worry about it. Bye, everybody. Say bye, Mark.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Ten seconds. Okay, I'll say goodbye again. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Bing.